This fellow, Ambrose, is really a big name in Christian history, and I probably should have gotten to him before this, but we will do him tonight. He has a family connection for me. My sister, who is Roman Catholic, decided to name her middle son after Ambrose. Not the first name, but his middle name. Tobias Ambrose is his name. Which is quite a name, but if once you hear the story behind this fellow, you will understand why it's a worthy namesake to be choosing. And I should tell you, I left you with a teaser this morning that all of you have quoted Ambrose probably multiple times through the years without ever knowing who it came from. And here's the famous quote from Ambrose. He was the first person to say, "When in Rome, do as the Romans do." That comes from Ambrose of Milan. And he actually had a very good theological point to make when he was saying that. Because his church in Milan, like most of the wider Christian church, practiced a regular day of fasting on Fridays. Roman Catholics still do. But the church at Rome had gotten on this slightly different track during that period of history, in which they were fasting on Saturdays. And so this was advice that Ambrose gave to his congregation, saying basically, don't ruffle feathers over little things in the body of Christ. When you're in Rome, fast on a Saturday, because that's the way they do it. Be gracious to your brothers and sisters in Christ. Let's take a look at our scriptures for this evening. The first one is from Psalm chapter 24. Verses 3 to 5. Who may ascend the mountain of the Lord? Who may stand in his holy place? The one who has clean hands and a pure heart, who does not trust in an idol or swear by a false god. They will receive blessing from the Lord and vindication from God their Savior. So this, of course, we'll see this played out in the life of Ambrose. This call for holiness among the people of God. He was a great encourager for personal holiness. But he also took a very firm stand against idolatry itself. He was living in a day when Christianity had sort of suddenly become the majority religion of the Roman Empire. But it was still new in that position. And the Roman Empire itself was not doing well. There were a lot of conflicts back and forth between rival emperors, invasions from other armies, and some people were starting to say, maybe we should cover all of our bases and put up a couple of the old altars to some of the old gods, just in case things are going bad right now because we've abandoned them. And Ambrose was one of those who put his foot down and said, no, we can't do that. We can't go back to our days of idolatry. Ephesians chapter 6, verse 13. Therefore, put on the full armor of God, so that when the day of evil comes, you may be able to stand your ground. And after you have done everything, to stand. This is a good theme verse for Ambrose's life, and this is what I hope will encourage you to stand your ground against the attacks of the culture and the world around us and the enemy and the flesh when temptations come against you. Because Ambrose had to be on the front lines of a theological assault, and he stood firm, he stood his ground and did not give an inch. So you see his picture there. This is from a mosaic in a church in Milan, and it's actually from the time where he lived. So unlike most of the people who lived in this time where we only have paintings from 500 years later, and they all look like the same old guy with a white beard, this is actually probably what he looked like. This is probably a portrait drawn from life of Ambrose. Let me read the first note there in his biographical box. Ambrose of Milan was one of the leading pastors in the Christian world during the 4th century AD, the golden age of the early church fathers. Born into an aristocratic family of Roman nobility, Ambrose was well educated and trained for a career in politics before being thrust into pastoral ministry. His aristocratic social standing and political skills would serve him well, even in ministry, because he became the leading voice of the church in several disputes against encroachments and abuses from the imperial state. So this is what Ambrose always wanted to be. He wanted to be a politician. That's what his dad was. That's what he thought he would be. But God had other plans for him. Instead of being a prince of the Roman Empire, he became a prince of the Christian church. He was known as one of the most eloquent speakers of his generation. He used his ability to give influential sermons in defense of the Orthodox Christian faith in an age when the Arian heresy was threatening to undermine biblical Christianity. And he had a strong reputation for just delivering beautiful rhetoric in his sermons, to the point where there even developed a little folktale about his infancy, where the story goes that when he was a baby, his dad rushed into his room because he heard little Ambrose crying in the crib, and came in to find that Ambrose's face was covered with bees. Well, they shooed the bees off of the boy's face, and Ambrose hadn't been stung, but they'd left behind little drops of honey all over his lips. So it was this sort of symbolic omen that he would be mellifluous, honey-tongued, a great speaker someday. Probably not true, but a fun little story. Just to refresh your memory, I mentioned the Arian heresy here. This was the big heresy to pop up in the 4th century. And it runs basically along the same lines as modern Jehovah's Witnesses, where they will believe in God the Father, and they will believe that Jesus is the Son of God, but when they say that, they don't mean what we mean by it. They don't mean that Jesus is equal in divinity with the Father. They believe that Jesus was a creature. He shared in some aspects of God's divine nature because he was the Son of God, but he was one rung below God the Father, the first of God's creations. That's what the Arians believed. And in 325, so a generation before Ambrose came along, the Great Council of Nicaea had been held. And the church decided, no, we are going to hold the line of orthodoxy, preaching the Bible as we've always preached it, which is to say that Jesus Christ, the Son of God, is one with the Father. They share the same divine nature. They're consubstantial with each other. However, even though the Council of Nicaea won that battle, a lot of Arians kept on trying to win their side of the argument. They kept on pushing the envelope to the point where they started gaining influence in the imperial courts. The emperors and the wives of emperors started listening to the Arians. And there was a serious danger that if they convinced enough people, they might be able to throw their own church council and reverse the decision of Nicaea, which of course would be bad news for Christianity and for the true exposition of the biblical faith. So Ambrose comes along sort of right at the climax of this battle. The final note there is about one of Ambrose's other impacts. Ambrose's ministry attracted a young seeker, Augustine of Hippo, who had tried all the available religions of the ancient world after rejecting his childhood Christian faith. It was Ambrose's influence that brought Augustine back to the church. And there's a picture of Ambrose baptizing Augustine on the back page there. Augustine's the one standing in the baptistry, of course, and Ambrose is the fellow in the tall white bishop's hat above him. And Augustine went on to become the most influential theologian in the history of the Western Christian world. Augustine is still, the thought of Augustine, the way he interpreted the Christian faith and the Bible and sort of put it into a theological structure, it's still the way we Protestants talk about it today. It's still the way Roman Catholics talk about it today. Martin Luther, the great Protestant reformer, was a big fan of Augustine and his theology. But it all starts with Ambrose. If it hadn't been for Ambrose, we might not have gotten St. Augustine and all of his beautiful impact on the history of the church. So let me tell you a little bit of the story of Ambrose's life. Excuse me. In the year 374 AD, Ambrose is now 35 years old. I have the note written out there, but I'm not going to read it word for word. I'll just tell the story. Ambrose is 34 years old, so he's about my age. And he's been trained to be a politician. He has been trained in law and civics. And if you know your history of the old Roman Empire, you know that even if you're not an emperor, there's still a lot of prestigious political spots for you to fill. They still had an imperial senate at this point in the history of Rome. They still had consular delegates and proconsuls. They had civic magistrates that oversaw cities. And Ambrose's dad had been a major figure in the empire. He had been the prefect over France and Spain and Britain, really a quarter of the entire empire. Thank you, Pam. And Ambrose wanted to do the same thing. So he had trained for this, and then he had been awarded the magistracy of Milan. And at this time, Milan, as you probably know, is a very famous and important city in Italy, in the northern part of Italy. And at this point, it was really the second most important city in this whole half of the Western Empire. It was, in a sense, it was nosing ahead of Rome itself. Rome still had the prestige of being the ancient capital, but it wasn't the capital anymore. That had moved over to Constantinople. And so Milan was the new, thriving, up-and-coming city in the West, in Italy. And whenever the emperors were in the West, they often stayed in Milan much more than they stayed in Rome, because Rome was starting to run down and become just a city full of ruins at this point. So to become the magistrate of Milan was a big deal. He is on the rise, quick rise. Well, as civic magistrate, one of his jobs is to keep order in the city. And there was trouble brewing because the bishop, the head pastor in Milan, had passed away. And there were two rival factions among the Christians in Milan. There was a group of Arians who were favored by some of the court officials. Some of the emperor's men were Arians. And then there were the Orthodox Christians, who were most of your regular day-to-day church-going lay people. And they each desperately wanted their own leader to be the next bishop. So they had what we would call in our political parlance a contested convention. If you've been hearing about this in the news and wondered what it would look like, well, here's what it looks like. And it's actually going to play out here in much the same way as maybe the Republican one will play out. We'll see. In this contested convention, the Arians and the Orthodox Christians each had their own candidate, and they despised the other person's candidate. And so Ambrose, the magistrate, he's gotten a reputation for being just and kind. He goes down to the church just to arbitrate this thing, to make sure a riot doesn't break out among the church folks. Ambrose himself is a believer in Jesus Christ. He was raised in a Christian family, but he was never actually baptized as a Christian. The reason why is because many in this era, they had a sort of a superstitious view of baptism. A lot of the common people did, not the theologians. A lot of the common people had this superstitious notion that baptism is what washes away your sins. So you want to wait until you're dying and then get baptized. Because if you get baptized when you're 34 years old, there's a lot of room in there for a lot more sins. And you've already used up your baptism. Well, of course, that's not good theology, but that's what a lot of the common people thought. So Ambrose hadn't been baptized. So technically, he's not even really part of the church. He's not a member of the church. But he's there arbitrating this dispute. And while these sides are shouting at each other, suddenly they hear a voice shouting out from the crowd, and it seems to be a child's voice, and it shouts out, "Ambrose for bishop!" And Ambrose is taken aback and starts to say, no, I can't be bishop. I'm not even a baptized Christian. But the crowd takes up this chant, "Ambrose for bishop, Ambrose for bishop." Because he was a well-respected man in the community. Both sides liked him. He was the perfect compromise candidate. So you have this contested convention, and out of the blue, some new guy gets appointed. It can happen. Ambrose actually at first did not say yes to this. He ran out of the church and hid in a friend's house because he didn't want to be bishop. He wanted to be a politician. But it really was, in that day, in the way they did it, it really was the choice of the church people as to who their bishop would be. And a few days later, they got a letter from a leading churchman in Rome saying, "I think this is a great choice. Ambrose would make a fantastic bishop." And so at that point, Ambrose came out of hiding and said, "Okay." So they go ahead, they baptize him, and then they immediately make him a priest, and then they immediately raise him to the level of bishop. So he's just jumped up three huge rungs in the life of the Christian church so that he can be bishop of the city of Milan. And he comes from a wealthy political family, as I said. So his first official act as bishop is that he takes all of the wealthy family estates, almost all of it, and sells them off and gives the money to the poor. He says, "I don't want to be worrying about the administration of estates when I'm supposed to be worrying about the church." He keeps a little bit for his younger brother to administrate because you can't sell off the whole family inheritance if you've got a brother and a sister, as he had. But most of it he gives to the poor. And he becomes a champion of the poor throughout his ministry. Over and over he comes back to this. And it's important because he's in a city of the emperors where there's people who are lavishly wealthy. And so in his sermons he is always reminding them, you need to give to the poor. When you give to the poor, you're really just returning a portion of their rightful share to them. God made this whole world for all of us. And so some of it belongs to the poor. When you give to the poor, you're giving them some of their rightful share. And he would pound away on that theme throughout his ministry. Look at the flip side of the page here. Just a few years later, 377 AD, Ambrose has become widely regarded as a powerful defender of the Orthodox Christian faith. And the 18-year-old Emperor Gratian asks him to compose a book on the faith so that Gratian will not be swayed by the arguments of the Arians. Ambrose responds with his greatest theological works, the two books of his De Fide. So, as you can tell, Ambrose quickly disappoints the Arian faction because he, as soon as he gets into the office of bishop, he starts studying theology. He starts studying the Bible. And he comes very quickly to the conclusion that no, the Council of Nicaea had it right. And the Orthodox tradition of interpreting the Bible, of saying that Jesus Christ truly is divine, that's the right answer. So sorry all the Arians who voted for me at the convention, but you're wrong. And there was a change in emperors, so Gratian, this young man, follows Ambrose's way, and at his behest, Ambrose composes two of his great books of faith. At this time, though, not only were some people in the imperial court Arians, there was also Germanic tribes that were starting to pour down in those invasions into the Roman Empire. You probably learned about this whole process back in high school and college history courses, that this is what led to the collapse of the Roman Empire. Goths and Visigoths and Ostrogoths and Franks and Lombards started invading down from the Balkans and Germany. And eventually they conquered pretty much the whole thing. And this was near the beginning of that process, and a group of the Goths, the Eastern Goths, were winning battles really right next door, just across the Adriatic Sea in the Balkans from him. They were the ones who had defeated the previous emperor and killed him, the Emperor Valens II. And a large number of Christians had been captured in these wars. The Goths themselves were Christians, but they were Arian Christians. And so anytime they came across a Catholic Orthodox church settlement, they saw these people as the enemy. They would capture them. And Ambrose did something kind of spectacular. He took his churches, these wealthy endowed churches in aristocratic Milan, and he started selling off all the trappings, all of the altar coverings that are donated by the imperial family, all of the plates and the saucers and the altars and the candlesticks and everything, and he would sell them all off so that he could ransom back these Christian prisoners from the Goths. So he was a firm defender of Orthodox Christianity and an opponent of the Arians, but he was merciful. He, unlike some others in his time period who were starting to get to the point of shedding blood over this dispute, Ambrose always counseled against executing heretics. He says, this is not something that God would have us do. We may disagree with these people, but it doesn't give us the right to kill them. And so he was an influential voice in that regard too. In 385 and 386, this is where we come to the climax of the confrontation against the Arians. Because there's another new emperor. Poor young Gratian did not last long. Another new emperor, Valentinian II, and his mother Justina are in the city of Milan. They start championing the Arian group in Milan, and they are determined to secure one of the two churches in the city for their use. At that time, there were two main cathedrals in Milan. One was inside the walls, one was smaller and was outside the walls. And the imperial family at first came to Ambrose and wanted the big lavish one inside the city. And he said, no, we're not going to give that over for Arian worship. And then they sort of as a compromise, they said, well, give us the little church outside the walls. And he said, no. He said, it is not the place of the priest of God to surrender the church of God. So, things sort of spun out from there. They're holding church one day in their big cathedral inside town, and suddenly someone rushes in and tells the congregation and says, hey, they are throwing basically, I don't know what you call them, requisition banners over the sides of the old church outside the city. Meaning basically the imperial family is claiming it as its own property. And the church is in uproar about this, and half of his congregation gets up and storms out to try to stop them. Ambrose stays there and finishes the church service, and then he goes after them. Well, unfortunately, along the way, some of his church folks get a little out of hand. They run into an Arian priest in the streets, and they capture this guy, and they start to beat him. And because of this, the emperor and the emperor's mother arrest many of the leading members of Ambrose's congregation and say, we're not letting them out of jail. They beat up this guy. We're not letting him out of jail until you let us have that other church. Ambrose still wouldn't let them. What he did is he staged what we would call a sit-in. He went and took a group of his church followers, and he went to that little church outside the walls and sat down in the sanctuary, and they stayed there. And the emperor's mother sent her troops and surrounded the church. So you have this, basically a siege of a church going on. But Ambrose did two remarkable things in these situations. First, he decided that this was a perfect time to introduce some new worship music that he had been working on. He was a gifted musician, and he had developed this new way of singing in church that what we would now call, it would sound really old-timey to us, we would If you heard it, you would probably call it Gregorian chant. But the idea behind it was revolutionary. It was antiphonal singing. It was having a leader and then a group of the congregation chant back in response, overlaying these harmonies on top of one another as they chanted through the hymns of their worship. And not only that, he wrote some hymns himself, some wonderful hymns. There's about a dozen of them. Even now, 1,700 years later, Christians are still singing them. Not so many in the Protestant church, but definitely in the Catholic church. I think there might be a couple that of his that have still come down in the Protestant tradition. But basically, so he starts singing, and everyone outside the walls can hear this new music that they've never heard before being raised in worship. And the soldiers begin to get interested. What's going on in there? This sounds different than anything we've ever heard before. And ultimately, that little protest would launch a new wave of worship music across the Western Empire. So the way the church worships musically has been changing all through the centuries and continues to change even today. But it's one of the beginnings of that whole process was there in Ambrose in his little protest. The second thing that Ambrose decided to do was to say, well, hey, I've got these soldiers out there, and most of them are Christians, Arian Christians or Orthodox, I don't know, but they're Christians. They're not going to want to massacre the Bishop of Milan and his folks inside the church, so I've got a captive audience. Ambrose goes out on the threshold of the church and starts preaching to the soldiers. And every couple hours he'll go out there and he'll give them a whole new sermon. And after a few days of this, the soldiers were really starting to like Ambrose. He was a great speaker. They felt pulled over to his side. And so eventually, Valentinian II, his mother Justina, they realized that most of their soldiers are fonder of Ambrose than of them. And they're not going to win this siege because they've already lost the hearts of their men to this wild-eyed fanatic preacher. Well, they don't quite give up then. They give up trying to get that little church outside the walls. But they have another trick up their sleeve. They propose a debate. They say, well, Ambrose, you're an eloquent defender of the faith. Let's stage a debate between you and this great Arian theologian. And Ambrose, he probably could have done fine in a debate, but he knows it's a setup. He knows that it's going to be orchestrated by the imperial court, and the questions are going to be favoring the other guy. Plus, he doesn't want to give the Arians a hearing. Their heresy has already been condemned 50 years ago at the Council of Nicaea. You don't invite them back onto the stage just because some high uppity-ups want them there. So he says, no, I'm not going to debate them. And because of that, the emperor and his mom decide to try to evict Ambrose from the city. But his congregation knows the routine now, and they stage their own sit-in protest. They put Ambrose in the middle of their cathedral, and they sit all around him, and they start singing their hymns again. And once again, they win the day. The imperials relent. Ultimately, Ambrose is able to sort of win over the hearts of the whole city of Milan in a dream, it's revealed to him where the relics of some forgotten martyrs have rested. In this period of Christianity, the old martyrs, the ones who gave up their lives for the faith during the days of the persecution, they're highly revered. For Ambrose to be able to find the relics of two great heroes of the faith, most of the Christians in Milan said, that's probably a mark of God's approval on this man and on his ministry. And so at that, the emperor and his mother backed down, and he won the battle against Arianism in Milan. The next conflict comes in 390 AD. And here we have a new emperor. Valentinian II is gone. Remember, this is a time of turmoil. These emperors don't last long. They're constantly fighting each other. New ones will pop up and fight the old one. The new guy is a young fellow by the name of Theodosius, and he is one of the best emperors of this period of history. He is a faithful Orthodox Christian man, and he takes Ambrose as his mentor, and Ambrose counsels him for a number of important political decisions. So Ambrose's background in politics is continuing to give him power in ministry with the highest levels of society. He's got the emperor of the entire Roman Empire listening to him for how he ought to operate. But then trouble comes. A mob riot breaks out in the northern Greek city of Thessalonica, leading to the deaths of the garrison commander and two officers. Emperor Theodosius responds by ordering a massacre of more than 7,000 people. This would not have been uncommon in that day and age. Emperors had authority to use violent force. But Ambrose had talked Theodosius through this sort of situation many times, and he had always counseled him towards mercy. Even if you're the emperor, Ambrose would tell him, it's still murder to take a life unjustly. And murder is against the law of God. So Theodosius orders this massacre of 7,000 people. And Ambrose hears the news. Theodosius comes on Sunday to worship in the church at Milan. And Ambrose steps out on the front step and says, no, you can't come in my church. Can you imagine a pastor doing this today to anyone, any political leader who shows up? Most of them are grateful for the attention on their church. But Theodosius steps out and in front of the most powerful man in the world says, no, you can't come in here because of what you did. And you have there's a famous painting there. This painting hangs in the National Gallery in London. And I was privileged to see it with my own eyes when I was a student there. You have Ambrose in all his bishop's regalia holding out his hand. And Theodosius, the emperor, is the man who sort of crouched forward as if he's trying to come in. But Theodosius will not let him. And remarkably, Theodosius, the emperor, backs down. He says, you're right. He repents in the street, in public. He tears off his royal regalia, wears sackcloth and ashes, and groans and cries out to God in the street for forgiveness. Well, what, can you imagine what a powerful scene this is to see the leader of the empire mourning and begging for forgiveness from God? This is a kind of humility which, unfortunately, is absent in most of our politicians today. But as you can see, Ambrose had tremendous, tremendous effect in his day and age, and he had this power of perseverance. And I hope his story is an encouragement to you to stand your ground against the wiles of the devil, against the culture that would seek to suck you into its ways of doing things. Be willing to stand, even in dangerous situations. I already gave you one quote from Ambrose. It's not listed here, mostly because everyone already knows it, when in Rome. But I also like these ones that I wrote down here. And you can see the beauty and the eloquence of Ambrose in these sayings. When we speak about wisdom, we are speaking of Christ. When we speak about virtue, we are speaking of Christ. When we speak about justice, we are speaking of Christ. And when we speak about peace, we are speaking of Christ. When we speak about truth and life and redemption, we are speaking of Christ. So Jesus Christ is the source of everything good. And so everything good in this universe that we talk about, we're talking about something that flows directly from Jesus Christ himself. The second quote is kind of along the same lines. In Christ we have everything. If you want to heal your wound, he is the doctor. If you are in need of help, he is strength. If you are in dread of death, he is life. If you are fleeing the darkness, he is light. If you are hungry, he is food. Oh, taste and see that the Lord is good. You can get a sense, can't you, for what a good preacher he would have been, delivering lines like those. The next one, I think, is a good aphorism to keep in mind in a lot of situations. It is not enough just to wish well. We must also do well. Good intentions are good for Christians, but of course you have to carry them out. Christianity is a religion of service. It's not just feeling good. It's not just wanting to help the poor. You actually have to step out and help the poor and do acts of charity. Then the final quote, I really like this one. These are actually his last words, the last words he spoke on earth. I do not fear to die because we have a good Lord. And what a comfort that is to all of us who one day will face that same passage. So that's the story of Ambrose. I hope you've enjoyed it. We do have a couple minutes left, so I'm going to have us sing one last simple song. And you'll find it in your hymnals at number 424.